Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Today our guest is Matt Levesque. He is the host of the Construction Zone Radio Show. He's a general building contractor and an industry expert for Contractors State License Board. Matt, we welcome you to our show.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
When we use the word general contractor, does that describe someone with a specific type of license?
Yes, it does. There are specialty licenses. Kind of give you a background. There's an A license, a B license, and then a whole flock of C licenses. And now there's even D licenses.
Okay.
So an A license is a general engineering contractor. They do streets, bridges, that type of thing. A B contractor is a general building contractor. And that means that they do two or more unrelated trades on a project.
Okay.
So let's look at a remodeling job, for instance. They're going to do framing, electrical, plumbing, drywall, painting, all those types of things. And you go to that general contractor and they can either do all or some of that work, and they can subcontract that work out to other specialty contractors. And that's where those C licenses come in.
Okay. Does that general contractor tag also describe their capability to handle the job?
No.
Okay.
No. There are a lot of people that have a general contractor's license that, in my opinion, really shouldn't try to do that. They get a general contractor's license so they can do facets of their specialty work. Let's say a plumbing contractor sometimes finds himself doing framing and things like that. And then they kind of inch into doing kitchen remodels and so forth. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And in my experience, there's a whole lot of contractors who are a little scary. They don't know their limitations.
What's the requirement for being a general contractor then?
4 years experience.
Experience in any of the licensed trades?
No, you have to have 4 years experience in general construction. So that means ground up from excavation and grading and concrete, framing, all the fields.
Usually working for someone else then?
That's right.
Okay.
Usually it's working for someone else. You can also get it through education.
Okay.
And then take the test and so forth. So, and there's really three parts to the test, although the Contractor's License Board says there's two. There's actually three. There's the legal part, there's the trade part, and in the trade part, there's a large section of math that comes into play, too.
Is there a type of work the general contractor is not allowed to do?
Anything that's a specialty contract, they can't do standalone. For instance, I can't go out and solicit and do plumbing
only. Okay.
I have to have a plumbing license to do plumbing.
Okay. So if you could get, let's say they were doing a school that included plumbing, you could get the general contract and sub out other licenses.
That's right. And I could also do that portion that I had a specialty license for.
Are there people that say they are contractors that don't have a license?
Yes. There's tons of those, too.
Tons of those?
We covered a few weeks ago on the show, we had covered a guy that I ran into probably about 6 years ago. His name is Tim Schaefer, and he was running around as a design build contractor. When I ran into him 6 years ago, he was pushing the design aspect. He was supposedly an architect and referred to himself that way. And what happened is, cut forward about 6 years, a gentleman's in Iraq serving our country, and he comes in and does the contract with these people. He's not a licensed contractor. In fact, had his license revoked and had been cited for licensing without for contracting without a license. So he's now in jail.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to ask you, the penalty phase for impersonating a contractor, jail?
Yes, jail. Yes, he's doing time. He got out of on the initial sentence. He was out on pending sentencing, and what happened was when he was out pending sentencing, he went out and solicited more contracts and was arrested on the spot, and of course that violated his conditions, so he ended up doing time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy.
What license is needed by a handyman?
Handyman doesn't need a license. In fact, in the state of California, you can do a project up to $500. Strike that. I think it is $500. It was $750. It's down to $500, I believe. But you don't need a license, but you need to disclose that you don't have a license. And that $500 includes labor and materials.
So that's pretty much days' work, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Very very limited.
Yeah. Although I know handymen and have run into handymen that have been working as a handyman doing everything from painting a bedroom to doing room additions for tens of thousands of dollars, unlicensed for years and years and years.
Okay.
And they are booked out for 6 months or a year because they've built their little clientele on a referral basis, and they've never had a complaint. And I really have a hard time, you know, getting angry with that type of guy who's really stood up for the trade and done a good job. But yeah, he should go out. And I always, whenever I run into people like that, I always tell them, hey, come on, get your license, get real. Yeah.
Well, maybe because the overhead would change. Is that a factor?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a quick example. I have a C-39 license, which is a roofing contractor's license. And a few years ago, my bond, contractors are required to carry a bond. My bond came up for renewal, and I got the invoice, and it was like five times what it normally was. And I called them up and said, what's the deal? And they said, well, you have a roofing license, and because you have this roofing license, you have to pay this extra bond, you know, premium. So I dropped the license, recently reinstated it because I'm doing more consulting work on that end of it. But yeah, there's a bond, a license bond, mm-hmm. $12,500 for most licenses, double that for roofing and for I'm sorry for pools.
No, the bond is $12,500, or the cost of it is $12,500.
No, the bond is $12,500. That means essentially what happens is if I did a job for you. And it didn't turn out, and you tried to, you know, get money from me, mm-hmm. and couldn't. You could file a claim against my bond and conceivably get that $12,500. Then the bond company goes after me and tries to collect it.
You use the word conceivably. Does that mean that's going to be difficult?
I've referred I do forensic work with attorneys on cases. What typically happens is you get in a long line. There's 10, 20 people who have been screwed over by these guys, and they're all tens of thousands of dollars, and so you see very little of it.
Now, your total, the bond company is only on hook for a total of $12,500?
Yeah,
okay, 12, so five. If there's 10 other people, then you guys get to share about $1,200
yeah.
a piece or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
What are the insurances if you're a contractor, and let's say I'm doing a rehab and I've got somebody coming out on the job site, what would I want them to have so I feel, okay, I'm protected?
Yeah. Number one is workers' compensation. So if you're a homeowner that's doing a remodel, or you're doing an investor flip like you guys do, mm-hmm. or, you know, going to turn it into rental, you want to make sure that the guys that are working on the job have workers' compensation. That protects them or basically rehabs them if they're injured on the job. It protects you as the owner because if you don't have it, your contractor doesn't have it, there's a chance that you're going to end up paying for that cost. The next level of coverage would be general liability.
Well, let's go to that first one.
Sure.
Okay. We found an interesting thing being done that will be presented at an evidence of workman's comp insurance mm-hmm. for the company. And then if we do a little bit of research, we find that in fact covers one person, and there are seven of those people on the job site.
Yep.
Is that a common practice?
Happens all the time. There are some loopholes that are legal for contractors to use. For instance, I had a roofing contractor up in the high desert who was a general partner with seven of his kids. So it was himself and seven of his kids, and you can imagine how much work eight people can do on a job. And they're competing. And by the way, workers' comp for roofing contractors is very high.
Very.
And they're competing with guys who have general employees and have to pay that rate. That law was recently changed. So unless it's a corporation and you're a shareholder in the corporation or an officer in the corporation, you don't have the option of opting out. You have to have workers' comp.
Okay.
That's the way I understand it.
So the opting out part is if I own, let's say I own the roofing company, I can mm-hmm. be physically on the roof and have said, I'll pass on workman's comp.
If you're the president or an officer of the corporation, yeah.
And if I had my son when he was in one of the two, then we could both be on the roof.
That's correct.
So what they were doing was having seven of those entities?
They were. Well, this was a general partnership.
Okay.
And a corporation, as you know, there are stockholders and then there's also officers.
Right.
So there's a few loopholes that contractors can legally use
mm-hmm.
to avoid paying workers' compensation on their employees. But the common one that you mentioned is where they go out and they pay a minimum premium for a workers' comp policy, and then they have one or two employees listed and seven or eight guys on the job. If one of those guys falls off the roof, gets hot tar poured on his neck, whatever, he's not covered because he's not specifically on the policy.
Let's say somebody does work like that for a couple of years. No one gets hurt, but then whoever's in charge of this stuff finds out they're not paying it.
Mm.
Is there a bill?
Yes, it's called workers' comp fraud.
Fraud, oh.
It's a big, bad penalty and potentially criminal penalties as well. Yeah.
So that could get outrageous. In other words, that could bankrupt a company overnight.
Yeah. What you'd also see if you do a search, if you go to the Contractor State License Board, that's real quick plug, www.cslb.ca.gov.
Okay.
You do a search for a contractor and you find that as you scroll down to the bottom of this page, he shows what his bonding company is and then it says this contractor is exempt from workers' compensation. Now, if a couple of years ago you did that with me, you would see that I'm exempt from workers' compensation because I'm a general contractor and I subcontract all my work out to other contractors who have workers' comp.
Right.
It's basically I'm a paper contractor.
Right.
That's the term.
Okay.
But you'll find some of those guys are exempt from workers' comp and they have tons of employees.
That's
and they
right.
have common law employees. So you got to be real careful.
Yes. It's you can't rely on even what you're handed. Do you find people are handing out evidences of license that are expired?
Yes.
Okay.
You,
or revoked.
Yes. And in a home improvement contract, for instance, you have to provide a statement that shows that you have general liability or don't have general liability. In a home improvement contract, that's required. It's kind of interesting that the only license that is required to have workers' comp is a roofing contractor. So you can't even get a license as a roofing contractor unless you have workers' comp.
Okay.
So in my case, for instance, where all of my employees are paper contract, you know, they're all subcontractors, I still have to have a minimum policy workers' comp, even though I have no employees.
Okay.
So
general liability policy then. Where
yes.
does that kick in? Something happens on the job site. What would that something be where that would kick in instead
yeah.
of?
An example, a quick example using the roofing contractor. You have a third party on the property or a third party on your way to the job site, let's say. And something happens, let's say a roll of tar paper falls over. It's sitting on the driveway or it's sitting out staging, getting ready to be loaded on the truck. And it falls over and smashes somebody's foot, let's mm-hmm. say. That's where general liability, the
okay.
type of example where general liability would come in, as opposed to an employee or as opposed to a homeowner or, you know, one of those types of exemptions.
The website that you mentioned, does that also show any track record of people not being pleased? Complaints, that type
yeah.
of thing.
There are some guidelines that the state uses to publish those. So they find, and I'm not really 100% sure how this works, but they find a complaint history,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are disclosable. Some of them are still being investigated, so they don't want to disclose them yet until they find out. It's frustrating for me. Sometimes I go out on these complaints and find the work is just atrocious. And you want to be able to warn the public, but the system doesn't allow that sometimes. So it's innocent till proven guilty, and there was quite a bit of discussion about that before it came online.
Let's say we start down the road working with a contractor, and we look at that atrocious work and go, wow, this isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
What are our rights to end the agreement, and what are our rights to say, I don't think you've earned that money?
Yeah. Well, here's the good thing about you. You're a smart businessman, but I run into plenty of homeowners who get way ahead of the payments. So the contractor will tell them they need $10,000 for materials or something like that, and they get the $10,000 check. They may or may not even come back. But don't number one is don't let payments get ahead of the work. If you do, you're always going to be in a position, awkward position of trying to get that work out of the guy. And, of course, he's not going to be doing his best work because he just wants to get out of there. So it's you see this all. I mean, I see it constantly. So number one is don't let the payments get ahead of the work. But the standard that you're asking about is what's called the standard of care in the industry. So if, for example, you have crown molding in a bedroom mm-hmm. or something, and you find there's a half-inch gap between the seams where the corners come together, okay, that's not the standard in the industry.
Right.
And there's a standard for just about everything.
Okay.
So tile grout and woodwork and cabinet drawers and just about, and of course, electrical and so forth. I've been in cases where I sit down in a arbitration meeting and a customer's sitting there and they said, you know, you put this electrical panel right in the middle of our closet and we can't even get to this. We can't put our shelves up in the closet because this electrical panel is there. And their defense is always, well, the inspector approved it. And that's their number one deal. Well, and my rebuttal, of course, is, did you know that's not where you put electrical panels?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a constant thing. And buyer beware. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Let's say the contractor orders a lot of material from Home Depot, has it delivered, does the work. I'm all happy, write the check, and Home Depot doesn't ever get paid. Is that a little problem for me?
That's a problem for you. That's okay. A significant problem. Again, another problem with roofing contractors probably in the last 10 years that has really blossomed, where especially with the roofing distributors, you will get a notice within 20 days of the start of work. You're supposed to get this notice. Okay, so once again, bide your time. Don't try to be a nice guy and pay everybody off until the work is done and the time has lapsed. So let's say, Bruce, that you have a roofing contractor come out and re-roof your house. And, you know, they prep it and so forth, and you're all excited, and then the material gets delivered and loaded on your house. And boom, the next day the job is done, and the guy says, hey, here's your invoice. When are you going to pay me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the mistake people make is they don't get a lien release for the materials. Okay. But one of the bigger mistakes is to slow down and let some time lapse. Let that 20 days go by, because from the time the job starts to the time that a supplier or employees, subcontractors notify you is 20 days. So all of a sudden you get this notice in the mail, and it's called a preliminary lien notice.
Right.
You get that prelim notice and you realize that you owe a roofing supplier $10,000 on your $15,000 job.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you have the opportunity to write a joint check. And most contractors will not have a problem with that at all. Okay. I don't have a problem with it. No one else should have a problem with it. Because if I have a supplier, if I have Home Depot and my company doing work on your job, that check can be made out to both companies. I take it into Home Depot, and they write me a check for my balance.
Okay.
So that's a good way to make sure it's taken care of.
So even if you paid your bill in advance, you would get the whole check then?
Yeah.
So it doesn't cheat you out of any money?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
What about if you hire a subcontractor?
And me as a contractor?
Yeah, you as a contractor hire a subcontractor who performs work, and then you don't pay him.
Same difference. Same thing.
Okay.
He's got 20 days to notify you. In this case, the only person you really know on the job is me. Matt's my contractor. You don't know that the plumber is Joe and the electrician is Frank, and that they've put out and may have also had suppliers through their companies supplied. All of a sudden, 15 days in the job, you start getting bombarded with these preliminary lien notices. And by the way, if they don't serve you with that preliminary lien notice, you're off the hook. You conceivably have the defense of saying, I never knew that Joe and Frank were working on the job, or that their suppliers provided toilets and electrical panels.
Okay.
So it's a good safety catch.
What are the steps to find reputable contractors?
My number one thing is to tell people to talk to their friends and neighbors.
Okay, so referral?
Referrals is the number one deal. You can also, not every advertising that you see is necessarily indicates a good product, whether it's car repair, contractors, or a restaurant. So that's not necessarily, a big ad doesn't necessarily mean they're a big operator. Number one is referrals. Number two is do your homework on those referrals. Guys get divorced. Guys go to the bar and get a drunk driving arrest or something. And the next thing you know, their whole business is out the door. So do your homework. Go to the contractor's license board and make sure you document that contract carefully.
One of the things I've noticed over the years is let's say I've worked with a guy for 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden something dramatically changes in his performance.
Yeah.
Is that Is that inbred into the contractor?
I think construction is somewhat nomadic. There's some other fields too, but construction, I think, really does lend itself towards that. Finding guys that have been around for 20 years or whatever, you know, is somewhat difficult.
It is.
You see a fresh new license and you want to give the guy a break and give him a shot. But like I said, if you control the money, then you control the job. If you try to be a nice guy and give him, you know, all the money up front so he, you know, can make his car payment or whatever the sad story is, you're asking for trouble.
Even material.
Oh, yeah.
Draws.
Absolutely.
Anything like that.
Yep.
Okay.
If you can't operate on a lead basis, if I couldn't go in and have a design guy work with you and pay for that design guy without, you know, of course I'd have a contract with you, but, you know, it just makes sense. What kind of businessman are you that you can't afford to go down to Home Depot and buy a couple $1,000s worth of stuff to do my job?
Yeah. You know? Are we usually paying the other job off?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I've always thought.
Yeah.
You need the 10 grand so you can go finish the job before me, and I sure hope you get another job soon so I can get started.
If it sounds too, you know, just have your radar up when you're dealing with anybody in this business. And I can tell that you've been down that road a time or two.
Yes.
So, yeah, you've learned after a while to be very cautious with certain individuals.
What's the warranty for somebody's work? I mean, let's say a roof.
Yeah.
How long is the warranty?
Contractor State License Board requires a 4-year minimum on all work.
Okay.
So if you do a job and you're a licensed contractor, under your license, you're required to give them 4 years. Most contractors don't know that or they don't believe it, so they'll write in their warranty, if they have a warranty, they'll write 1 year material, you know, 10 years labor, whatever the deal is.
But it doesn't override the rule.
No. Now, I can extend that and go with a 10-year warranty or whatever warranty I want to go with. But at the end of the day, the warranty is as good as the guy that stands behind it. Your manufacturers will have warranties on most of the products you buy. Roofing, for some reason, I'm focused on roofing today, but roofing is a great example. You can buy a 20-year, 25, 30-year, 40-year, or even 100-year life shingle.
Mm-hmm.
And you read that warranty carefully and you find out it's a lifetime warranty for your lifetime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or one transfer to another person, that type of thing. So
what are contractors especially like? Let's say they're working with someone like me and you talk to them and you go, I love working with this guy because, and what's filling in the blank that?
Number one thing for most contractors is payment.
Getting paid quick.
Getting paid.
Or at all.
Yeah, or at all is probably the better way. Yeah, the number two thing for most contractors, I think anyway, is challenging work or interesting work. Number one, as I said, is especially in this market, is having jobs that actually pay. But interesting work, carpenters, I know cabinet guys, for instance, they like the challenge of doing, you know, very intricate work. Electricians like the challenge of doing you know, a challenging project or a big complicated project. I like that. I did the Big Bear Solar Observatory pedestal for the telescope, and that was very interesting. It was an awkward site to work on. We had weather conditions and stuff, and it was an interesting and fun job, as an example. So,
on your Construction Zone radio show, do you interview anybody, or are you taking in calls?
No, we take calls.
You take calls, okay.
Yeah, we take calls, but we also have it's a 2-hour show, and so the people don't get too bored. No. we also have interviews with industry people. So we'll have attorneys that I work with and a myriad of contractors, suppliers, manufacturers. There's quite a few people that we have in.
Well, we have
to drag you in here.
I would be happy to. You know, we have a lot of people that are just starting their career, rehabbing.
Yep.
And so there's going to be a lot of need for them to get educated and hear the different types of things that they can, you know, avoid. Because one bad experience on a construction site can really do some damage to you.
It's the difference between having the project make money or having it cost you a lot of money. I mean, people get into, as you know, you've seen it, I'm sure, a million times. Investors get in there, everything's working right, and the construction aspect of the job kills it.
Absolutely.
And they walk away with their tail between their legs and say, no, I'm never going to do that again. And they don't. It's sad because with a little education, a little warning, they'd be more prepared.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.